This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. On Thursday last week, the family and friends of Demetria McDial gathered to lay her to rest. She was 32 years old when she died last month, in custody while waiting for a mental health evaluation in the St. Louis City Justice Center.
She always cared for her children. She was very protective. She found joy in its simple things. But most of us are here because she lived and she makes something in our life.
That was Pastor Eddie Morris eulogizing Demetria McDial at her funeral last week. Officials say McDial died of an unknown medical emergency, but the circumstances that brought her to that jail cell are increasingly common in Missouri, and it reflects what even lawmakers are acknowledging as a crisis in the state's struggling mental health system. In that system, even if McDial had gotten that mental health evaluation, there was a good chance that she would have been placed on another wait list, joining hundreds of other people, each forced to sit in jail, unconvicted, while their criminal cases and lives are suspended in limbo. This backlog of mental health cases is a situation we first talked about on this show in late 2023. At that time, the wait list was 223 people long. Last week, the number was 524. With us now to talk about the crisis of Missouri's mental health backlog and why it keeps growing, I'm joined by Steph Quinn, reporter for the Missouri Independent. Steph, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also with us is Annie Legomski. She's the Director of Client Advocacy for the Missouri Public Defender's Office. Annie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So, Annie, can you explain to us, you know, how someone like Demetria McDial gets on this wait list, and specifically what competency restoration is?
Absolutely. It's a complicated process, but essentially what it comes down to is that you have a right, anyone who's accused of a crime has a right to be competent to proceed before you can be prosecuted. So when someone has a serious mental illness, oftentimes schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or an intellectual or developmental disability that impairs their ability to either understand the criminal case proceedings or assist in their own defense. For example, you have a right to testify. If you're suffering from delusions, you can't do that effectively. Mm-hmm. So those folks can be what's called evaluated to determine if they're competent to proceed or not. And if you're not, then the case gets paused while you get psychiatric care.
So as a public defender, what is your role?
It's involved in a lot of parts of the process. So as a public defender, first of all, you have an ethical obligation to make sure that your clients are competent to proceed and that they're not going to be subjected to participating in the process they can't understand if they're not. But it gets much more complicated because what we've seen is that, and especially with the wait list and the delays that are happening in Missouri right now, is that it spills over into basic humanity. And sometimes we're the only ones there to kind of raise that alarm bell and say, wait a second, my client who's in the jail, who's been put in isolation because of maybe some behaviors related to their mental illness, now their physical health is degrading, they're not getting proper nutrition, hygiene, and as we saw with Ms. McDial, you know, it can result in much more tragic situations. So public defenders have to juggle a lot just to ensure not only are our clients' rights being upheld, but are they physically okay?
Mm-hmm. Steph, from your reporting, is there anything that you can add, supplement, right, to what Annie has said about what it means for a person to be in this backlog?
Yeah, I mean, I think Annie did a really great job explaining it. But certainly what was striking to me as I started reporting on this issue was just that the people who are in this situation haven't been convicted of the crimes that landed them in jail. And they're just kind of stuck in limbo indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I was just really struck by the kind of patent unfairness of that.
And the conditions of folks as they're waiting, mm-hmm. what has your reporting shown you of that?
I think it really varies depending on the person. But I would say, and this is something I've heard from sheriffs, from lawmakers I've talked to about this, jails are not designed to be places where you recover from serious mental health conditions. They're not therapeutic settings. So especially if you're someone who is suffering from like a mental health condition that you haven't been able to manage super well in the past, being in a cell, often in isolation, it doesn't increase your odds of getting better.
Mm-hmm. In your latest reporting stuff, you noted that Missouri has just 8 outpatient beds for people charged who've been ordered to undergo mental health treatment before their criminal cases can move forward. And there are also 440 psychiatric hospital beds, and each and every one of those is filled. So I understand that lawmakers have proposed bills, multiple bills to add more beds. Is that the solution here?
Well, so those numbers were from hearings last week in the House Budget Committee. Director Valerie Hoon from the Department of Mental Health was talking in depth about this issue. And lawmakers were asking questions like, what do you need to be able to fix this problem? Like, what's the solution? And one person even asked, what would be the price tag to fix this? And Director Hoon was a little bit hesitant to talk about it. I think partly because of the ongoing federal lawsuit, but also because, not everybody would necessarily be eligible for outpatient treatment, which is really kind of a new area of expansion, I think, for these folks. So it's really a complicated issue, and what works in one person's case might not work in another person's case. So lawmakers are grappling with all of that, I think.
And there are a lot of persons here we're talking about. Annie, would adding beds address the backlog?
No. not alone. I'm not saying we don't need more beds. That, of course, is the gut instinct. When you look traditionally at this, what it used to be is if someone was found incompetent, that meant that no matter who they were, what their illness was, what their charges were, they would go to one of our 3 forensic psychiatric hospitals in Missouri for competence restoration, which is basically psychiatric care in an acute inpatient setting. Quite expensive, I might add. I think it's about $1,000 a day mm-hmm. for someone to go there. What we did in 2023 as a state is pass a law that does allow what Steph was talking about, this outpatient restoration. That's now available for anyone with what's called a non-dangerous felony. So lower level, non-violent charges typically, which is more than half of the people on the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the courts have been slow to use that. The providers are still kind of figuring out what that means for them. And so while that changed in 2023, we've only actually seen a handful of people ordered into it since then. One of the barriers, getting back to your question about solutions, one of the barriers is that the folks that are in these positions that are going through this process, especially as public defender clients, which is most of the list, are poor and extremely mentally ill. And then by the time they get to this point of the process, they've probably gotten worse by sitting in the jail and deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they need is not just outpatient care, like going to a psychiatrist, like anyone would do when they're going from home, but they also need supportive housing. So I think more funding for supportive housing, which the governor did recommend some funding in his budget recommendations this year for that, is one of the best things we can do and help people gain stability and then be able to maintain that stability long after whatever happened in their case is resolved.
We're discussing a backlog of mental health cases in Missouri's justice system today. More than 500 people are currently waiting in jail for mental health evaluations before they can face trial, and lawmakers last week called that backlog a crisis. Steph, I'm going to return to you. The Missouri Independent has been covering this backlog for years, and that includes the work of your predecessor, Clara Bates. And that backlog has roughly doubled in the last 3 years. And you mentioned the 3-year mark. Mm. Steph, have you gotten a sense that there is more pressure now on lawmakers to act?
Well, it certainly seemed in the hearings last week that a lot of lawmakers on the Budget Committee in the House are seeing this as a crisis. And I'm fairly new to the Missouri Independent, so I can't necessarily directly speak to how things were before, but there does seem to be a bit of momentum behind this.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about, you know, why this has taken so long to address, you know, while the problem gets worse? I mean, given what you know, and then Annie, maybe if you have some things to add to that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there were some lawmakers in the committee who we're saying, like, this really looks like a crisis. And, you know, sometimes it takes us, you know, until something is a crisis to take action. And kind of the response from the director of the Department of Mental Health was like, well, we've been trying to work on this issue for like 5 years. And actually, Director Hoon has been saying for years, like, this is a crisis, like the numbers are going to hit 1,000 before they hit 500 or something to that effect. And one lawmaker actually asked, talking about jail-based competency programs, which was another initiative that was allowed by the 2023 law. He was asking, you know, why do we only offer this for 40 people at a time? And Director Hoon was saying, well, like, that's the funding that we got from lawmakers. It felt to me like lawmakers are wanting to kind of dive in and look at the different options that have been deployed to one extent or another and kind of figure out, like, where does it make sense to invest money and what would actually help address this problem.
And you're nodding.
Yeah, I completely. I mean, it's so complicated, and it has been going on for a long time. And we've been in front of the legislature talking about it. So many folks have gone to them, the Missouri Association of Counties, the public administrators, and Department of Mental Health themselves. But it's not easy to fix. That said, there are other states going through this too. And so the ACLU, MacArthur, and Arch City, and some others did file this federal lawsuit last fall suing the Department of Mental Health over this wait list. I think that's obviously put a lot of pressure on the state. And I know we're in a tough budget year, but as some of the lawmakers were pointing out in the Department of Mental Health's budget hearings last week, this problem is costing Missouri a lot of money when we don't address it head on. It's costing us even more on the back end because now we are hospitalizing more people for longer because they're even sicker. We need to address it on the front end, and we need shorter timelines for the Department of Mental Health to conduct these evaluations. In Ms. McDial's case, for example, the law currently allows for 60 days for the Department of Mental Health to do the evaluation, basically, you know, talk to the person, look at records, and make an opinion on whether they're competent or not. The Department of Mental Health is routinely requesting extensions of time to get those done. So Ms. McDial, she had that evaluation ordered, 60 days came and went. The department got an extension, and their report was due on January 30th. She died on January 31st, and we haven't seen that evaluation filed. Mm-hmm. So we need them to happen faster. We need folks then to get to the Department of Mental Health when they're found incompetent faster. And so, as I think we mentioned earlier, it's now 15 months on average.
15. Mm-hmm. And that is up from, I think it was 14 when we talked some time ago.
That sounds right, yeah. And well, it used to be days.
Mm-hmm. What are some solutions that have been taken up in other states?
So I think one of the main ones is really not just passing laws that allow outpatient restoration, but also then implementing it and getting the buy-in. So that's where I think we've slowed in Missouri. It's legal, it's possible, but we don't have the buy-in and we don't have the funding and structures in place to make it work well. We don't want anyone to just be released without support. Although if you're being held longer than the maximum range of punishment would allow, then I do think you need to be released no matter what, because that's what the law says. But people should have places that they can go. They should get some ongoing support in the community. Mm-hmm. The mobile team can help with that, but they're a very small team. So the women who run that team are amazing, but there's only four or five of them for each side of the state. And then we need to divert more people from the system in the first place. About half of the people who get mental health evaluations are found competent to proceed. So sometimes we have folks who come in and they're going through stress and crisis when they're arrested. We don't want the courts to order evaluations right away. We want to try and get them stabilized and out into therapeutic settings so they don't even have to go into this process, or even so that they're getting support in the community before the police are ever called.
Mm-hmm. There's a question that I wanted to ask about Valerie Hoon. But when we say beds, mm-hmm. is that therapeutic?
Yes, I think so. I mean, so, and there's acute inpatient psychiatric hospital beds. There's also just community-based inpatient beds, right, that are not in forensic hospitals for the criminal legal system. There's not enough of those. And then there are these permanent supportive housing beds that are like group homes where there's 24/7 care on site, but you get your own room, you get the skills to build up your support system, your independent living, and hopefully level down, step down. Mm-hmm. And it's much more cost-effective than sending someone to the hospital.
Yeah. Steph, to return to you, Missouri's Department of Mental Health has been sounding the alarm on this issue for years. And in 2024, Director Valerie Hoon predicted that it would get worse. Quote, it's probably going to be 1,000 individuals long before we're at 100 individuals. Did Director Hoon, at this legislative hearing that you covered last week, did she have any specific requests or demands for lawmakers?
So I think Director Hoon is standing firmly behind the $6 million of funding that the governor has recommended to expand outpatient treatment for folks on this list. I think she was a little bit more hesitant to make direct recommendations. And this has actually been kind of a trend across departments, and some lawmakers are a little bit frustrated about not being able to get that kind of feedback from folks in the executive branch. But I mean, she was very forthcoming about the various initiatives that DMH has been using to try to at least slow the growth of the wait list. So I guess my answer is not necessarily, mm-hmm. A little bit hesitant to make direct recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Annie, I started this conversation by mentioning the case of Demetria McDial. She died while she was on that mental health wait list, and you talked about that connection with the Post-Dispatch, and you said, quote, she's not the first person to die in jail while waiting for the mental health care she deserved, and unless we make significant changes, she won't be the last. Why do you believe, you know, that this backlog is a life-threatening issue?
Like I had said, she is not the first client we've had who's died in the jail while suffering from a mental illness and not getting the medical care she needs. Correctional officers, and we hear from sheriffs all the time, we're aligned with them on this issue. They reach out and they say, we don't know what to do. We're not set up to be a mental health facility, like Steph was saying. And so when you've got someone with severe and persistent delusions, for example, a lot of our clients, right, their delusions, they're not nice, right? I have clients who think when they go to bed, someone's going to take their eyes. We have clients who are pulling their fingernails out and scratching their skin off. And so when they're crying out for help all day, every day, untrained correctional officers don't know what's reality and what's fiction, and they're not set up to respond to medical crises.
Mm-hmm. Annie Legomski is an attorney and social worker with the state public defender system, and Steph Quinn is a reporter with the Missouri Independent. Steph and Annie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.